Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, welcome to a new episode of Germany in Focus, a podcast made possible by members of The Local. Today, we're getting into what the European elections mean for Germany and the big issues at stake. We're talking about the German love of techno music and why the scene is being honoured in Berlin. The future of alpine skiing in Germany isn't looking good. We'll talk about the effects of the climate crisis and how it's changing ski resorts. Finally, it's Easter next week, so we'll talk about what's open and closed in Germany and some of the traditions. I'm Rachel Loxon, and I'm in Berlin today with the lovely journalists Aaron Burnett and Paul Krantz. Hello.
Hello.
You're back, Aaron.
I am indeed. Yes, it's great to be back in the booth after a little visit to the US and home to Canada. I will note that this is the first time Paul and I have been in the booth together. So, you know, let's kick off the return with a little something new. Also, we are for the second time in Germany in Focus history, we have two men in the booth.
Oh, what have we done?
I know. And two North Americans as well with our little accents. So, yeah, obviously we'll make some more history. is that what's happening?
We're moving forward with equality here.
There you go.
How's it going, Paul?
Yeah, I'm great. Glad to be with both of you in the booth today. And also today I'm celebrating the spring equinox and the beginning of spring in Germany.
That's
indeed,
right.
Yes. Days are actually getting longer to the point where, you know, it's not completely depressing and winter outside in Germany with no sun.
From here forward, all of our mental health just gets better and better.
Yeah, definitely. Excited about this.
We love to hear it. Yes. So we are recording this on Wednesday, March the 20th, and we are enjoying the lovely spring weather.
Indeed.
Before we get into it, Aaron, is there any sign of the new citizenship law getting that signature from the president that it needs?
Well, this is the big question because we've all been waiting. I mean, this law passed the Bundestag in late January, passed the Bundesrat in early February. And at that point, ever since, only the final signature from the federal president has been necessary to really actually make this law official. But we're still waiting for it. Now, our source within the president's office tell us that when the president actually gets a law to review, that it normally takes them around 2 weeks to do a proper constitutional review of it. It's mostly a formality, but it's still necessary. It can take a little bit less time. It can take a little bit more time. However, we have found out as of this week that the law had still not been actually sent to the federal president's office by the government.
Wow.
Yeah.
So just gathering some dust somewhere?
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently, the Ministry of Justice had to edit and put the final text of the law together to submit to the president, a law that has already passed the, you know, actual parliament. Mm-hmm. So I guess this is a thing that happens when the government has to countersign laws. We have seen reports, though, that by now it is either imminently going to the federal president's office or it already has done so. So hopefully Frank-Walter Steinmeier's office can actually have a look at this law, sign off on it. And remember that according to the actual text of the law, the new rules come into effect from exactly 3 months from the day that he actually signs it. So that's when we're actually going to know exactly what date that this law becomes effective.
Okay, so this episode comes out on the Friday. If it's been signed by then, you will find a story on this on the Local Germany website. That's local.de. We'll put any updates in the show notes. And yeah, we looked before we recorded and nothing as yet.
Nope, sadly not.
Okay, let's move on to a bit more politics. The European elections are coming up on June the 9th this year. Voters in Germany will go to the polls to elect 96 parliament members to the European Parliament for the next 5-year term. I don't think it's an understatement to say that this is a very tricky time for Europe. Since the last election, we've had a global pandemic, we've had the full-scale invasion by Russia on Ukraine, and record inflation, among lots of other things. All of this has contributed to a turbulent time in Germany. Aaron, can you tell us, what do these elections mean for Germany and what are the big issues?
Well, Rachel, with 96 seats, as you have just said, Germany has the largest single share of European Parliament seats. There are 705 such seats, and hundreds of millions of Europeans are eligible to vote, including people here in Germany. It is one of the largest legislative bodies in the world, representing some of the second largest number of people. Only the Parliament of India actually represents more people than the European Parliament. It's important to note, though, that the members of the European Parliament don't sit there based on country. So these people from Germany are not elected to represent German interests in Brussels. They sit in Brussels and Strasbourg based on party groups. So a Green from Germany and a Green from France will sit together. That German Green won't be sitting with the German Christian Democrats. They themselves, those CDUers, will be sitting on the other side of the chamber from their German counterparts in the Greens, with parties like Ireland's Fine Gael, which is another centre-right party, for example. European parliamentarians say they do that to encourage you to vote in a European way, considering the issues that you think will impact all of Europe. And they themselves aren't technically supposed to go to Brussels to represent purely their national interests. They're supposed to act in what they see as being in the interests of all of Europe. And if that conflicts with their own country's interests, then that's what's necessary. That's what they are elected to do. So people who will vote in the European elections are encouraged to vote that way rather than treat the elections as a referendum on their own national government, although studies do tell us that does happen a lot. But the European Parliament has the power to act only on a few hot button issues. So things like national defense and healthcare, they stay largely at the national level. Where does the European Parliament have more power to act? Well, when it comes to things like tech and artificial intelligence, GDPR, for example, where we now have to, whenever we visit a site, say whether we agree to the cookies or not, those kinds of things, that was originally came from a data privacy initiative from members of the European Parliament. So was ending roaming charges in the EU. The reason why you get to go with your German phone to Spain or Denmark or somewhere else and not have to pay roaming there is because of a legislative proposal that originally started in the European Parliament. So when it comes to things like consumer protection, food safety, certain actions on climate change transition, like the European Green Deal, they have to approve trade deals. They also have some things to say on Europe's support for Ukraine and whether Ukraine will eventually become a member of the EU. All of these things involve the European Parliament. And also whether Ursula von der Leyen, who is the first German Commission president since the 1960s and the first woman to ever hold that job, actually, gets another term. Whether she gets another term depends a lot on the results of these particular elections as well.
These are some really important points, especially, you know, we're hearing a lot about tech at the moment with the likes of ChatGPT and various AI things.
Yeah.
I feel like they have a lot of work on their hands with that.
Yeah, they definitely will. And you can certainly expect members of the European Parliament to be taking that up in the next legislative session for sure. I mean, you know, how artificial intelligence is regulated, how ChatGPT is regulated. It may take a couple of years, but I certainly expect that European parliamentarians are going to have more than a few things to say about that. And they are given the power to have a say on tech issues like that one.
Who do we expect will do well at these elections, Aaron, both in Germany and the wider Europe?
Well, Rach, in Germany itself, the latest poll we have indicates that the center-right Christian Democrats and their Bavarian sister party, the Christian Social Union, the CSU, are really running away with this, in Germany at least. The latest polls that we have basically have them anywhere between 30 and 34% of likely voters saying that they're going to go for the union. That is probably around 5% or so more than the last elections in 2019. None of the other parties are anywhere close. The Greens, the Social Democrats, even the far-right AfD, Alternative for Germany, are all coming in at around 15%. And actually, what I find interesting is that is a lower result for the AfD than we're seeing in national polls. Mm. There are more voters who say that they'll vote for the AfD at the national level than say that they'll vote for the AfD at the European level. Now, although they're center-right, the CDU is a party of the European European People's Party, which often works together in a sort of a grand coalition of sorts with other, you know, center-left, center-right parties in the European Parliament, like the Social Democrats, the Greens. But the populist right will probably see successes elsewhere in Europe. So polls that we have everywhere from Austria to Sweden, France, the Netherlands, all suggest that the far right could make some big gains in places like that. So actually, in some ways, Germany is a bit of an anomaly to have such a centrist party be so far out in front at the moment for the European elections.
Aaron, can you tell us how they work and who can actually vote in Germany?
So if you're a citizen of the European Union, so yes, German, but maybe also Irish, French, Italian, etc., you can vote in the European elections wherever you live in the EU. So if you're an EU citizen living in Germany, you don't need to be German to vote here. In fact, for European elections, you don't vote where you're from. If you're Spanish, you don't vote in the Spanish contest. You vote where you live. So a German living in Spain would vote there, just as a Spaniard living here would vote here. Germany is one national constituency, and the vote is proportional. Plus, there isn't the same threshold here as for national elections, so even smaller parties can sometimes get a seat. Now, EU citizens over the age of 16 who live here, 16, so a bit younger than other places, who live here in Germany and are registered, should have gotten a letter, registered, have their Anmeldung here, should have gotten a letter explaining that they have the right to vote. Thing is, you might have to register to vote, particularly if you haven't voted here before. You'll need to send a letter or bring a signed form in person to your local election office. And you can get that form online from the Bundeswahlleiterin, although that is also detailed in the letter that you should have gotten in the mail. Furthermore, that form needs to be in by Sunday, May 19th, in time for you to be on the list for the elections in Germany that happened on Sunday, June 9th. And once you're registered, you should be able to vote either in person or via postal ballot. And also, once you're registered, you should get voter information in the mail telling you where to vote or how to do it via postal ballot, if that's what you want to do.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for that, Aaron. Definitely get on that. If you can vote, go for it. Let's move on. It's been a good week for techno lovers. The city of Berlin's techno scene has been added to the UNESCO list of intangible cultural heritage in Germany. Many of our listeners who have come to Berlin might have sampled some of the city's clubs and experienced the techno here. So why has it been given this honor, Paul?
So, Rach, the push to include techno culture on the UNESCO list was championed more recently by Rave the Planet, which is this nonprofit organization that created Berlin's infamous Love Parade. According to Rave the Planet, the effort to do so actually goes back to at least 2011, when a number of people working at the Kunsthaus Tacheles, which was an important cultural hub in Berlin at the time, basically sat down and decided to make this collective goal out of getting techno recognized as an intangible cultural heritage. But more generally, techno music and techno culture has been a big part of Berlin's identity, and even Germany's identity, since the early 90s. So Berlin's techno scene has only grown since then. It attracts people from around the world and has come to be seen by many as the world capital for live techno music and techno clubs. So I would say the recognition here is definitely warranted.
Yes, it is.
And can be seen as an effort by Germany to recognize the diversity of its modern culture. In fact, Germany's Minister of State for Culture, Claudia Roth, has said as much. Roth said that the recognition stands as an expanded concept of culture that opposes the absurd separation of E and U culture, meaning the serious or elitist culture versus popular culture.
Ooh.
Love this. Paul, can you tell us a bit about the history of techno in Berlin and Germany?
Yeah, so techno music originated in Detroit in the mid-80s and can be seen as a progression from disco or house music. And it was influenced by the harsh mechanical sounds that filled Detroit's industrial landscape. So techno quickly found a following in Berlin around the early 90s. This was shortly after the reunification of Germany and the fall of the Berlin Wall. So people from the former east and west sectors of the city suddenly had this freedom to move around. And the city was full of these abandoned bunkers or old power plants and underground stations where people could throw unregulated all-night parties.
Indeed, Berghain is itself a converted power plant.
That's right.
Right?
So eventually some of these spaces or more regular events evolved into some of Berlin's first official clubs. One that is often credited as really establishing the scene in Berlin was the UFO Club, which still exists today as Tresor.
Tresor. Great little night out. I love Tresor.
And a couple other notable early clubs were Der Bunker, which has since closed, and Ewerk, which is now used as a space for corporate events. And by the way, I can't think of a better symbol or a metaphor for Berlin's kind of evolution of a city over the recent years than this Ewerk building, which was originally a powerhouse for electricity production and then was used as a techno club and now has become a space for hosting gala dinners.
If I'm honest, though, I think Berlin is probably the only place that I've gone to a gala dinner and there's been techno. So there you go.
A little bit of overlap.
Yeah.
And finally, I think it demands to be said that a core aspect of this developing techno party culture has always been a kind of radical acceptance and creating spaces where everyone can feel safe expressing themselves freely, regardless of sexual preferences or ethnic backgrounds.
Absolutely. What's the reaction to this been like?
I think the overall reaction has been overwhelmingly positive, especially for people who've worked on this for many years. I'm sure it must be really special to see Berlin's techno culture be kind of officially recognized in this way.
Yeah, also after the pandemic when everything was shut for so long.
Totally. So now Rave the Planet has called it a major milestone for the entire culture. Berlin's Club Commission, which represents the interests of techno venues and artists in the city, has said that the decision will help to ensure that the club culture is recognized as valuable and deserves to be protected and promoted. They also gave shout outs to bands like Kraftwerk and African-American producers like the Underground Resistance from Detroit for their contribution to the culture.
Good shout out to Kraftwerk there.
German institution in themselves.
Yes, in themselves, indeed.
I suppose it is to be seen if this will have any real world implications. Some have kind of wondered if the UNESCO listing could have an impact on city planning. For example, the decision to clear out a number of clubs to make way for the 100 Autobahn project. I think it's pretty unlikely that that would happen, but it could be that in the future, certain venues could make an argument that as part of Berlin's cultural heritage, they deserve some level of preservation or support from the city.
Are either of you keen clubbers or techno fans? Do you know the differences between techno subgenres?
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm dancing right now.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
I would definitely say I'm a Berlin club fan. I'm terrible at identifying the different subgenres of techno. I mean, I know what I like when I hear it, but I'm not going to trust myself to call out like acid techno versus industrial versus Detroit, et cetera, et cetera. But one thing that I want to point out that I thought was pretty funny is the official UNESCO definition of techno. So UNESCO...
There is now an official...
Yeah, we want to hear
United Nations cultural institution definition.
Exactly. So UNESCO defines techno as electronic sounds that are strung together in a rhythmically monotonous structure. It is characterized by the very high modulability and bandwidth of frequencies. DJs lead from one piece to the next through synchronized transitions... The so-called mix.
that almost sounds poetic. Like maybe that needs to go into a techno mix or something.
Yeah, that, well, there we go. I mean,
it's only a matter of time now.
With international, your voice.
An international organization in Paris, you know, defines Berlin techno.
If any DJs are listening or producers are listening right now and they take that soundbite and put it in a mix, please let us know.
Yeah, please do that.
Aaron, what about you?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely a Berlin Club fan, particularly of the gay variety. And there's usually a pop floor and a techno floor at most of them.
Important.
So when you're, you can have your techno and you can have your Britney. I mean, why make the decision?
Right, when you can
have both and you can alternate between the two of them, you know, the way that we were all meant to. Without saying that I'm an aficionado, that knows, like, you know, all of the subgenres or anything. But I do think the status of cultural icon is absolutely appropriate.
I agree. So I'm not a huge fan of electronic music. I'm more guitar pop fan. I do like Madonna, Britney Spears, as Aaron knows. But I have to say, I do think the club scene and techno in Berlin is very special. The club night organizers really managed to create almost like an otherworldly atmosphere, I would say, because there's no closing time, or at least that's what it feels like. So you can go into a club on, I don't know, Sunday lunchtime, and you come out on Monday morning at 8 a.m. And that just gives this feeling of like that you're like out of time and space. And the other thing that I really notice is that I think you touched on this, Paul, there is a sense of being free to do anything in Berlin clubs that you want, with respect, of course. In many places, a sticker is placed on the camera on phones, so you won't find people filming or taking photos. And if you did, I think it would be seen as very bad taste. And there are also dark rooms, and people can kind of indulge their fantasies and things like that. So yeah, I definitely think that you're in another planet when you go to a Berlin club. And might I also add, there are a lot of drugs.
This is also true, but you don't need to.
You don't.
So like anyone's going to force drugs on you.
Exactly.
Either, right?
Well, nobody will force anything on you, but I'm saying that all of this, there, you know, it does give to this very interesting atmosphere.
Yeah, I think out of time and space is appropriate. I mean, you can go into some of them and you can lose all sense of time. And some of them don't have mirrors either. So it's you can't check yourself there either.
Yeah, I actually I have been to Berghain once a number of years ago. And I do remember that when I was in the bathroom, this completely naked guy turned to me and was like, "Is my hair look okay?" And I was like, "It's fabulous, darling." Like,
that sounds like Berghain.
Yeah, there are no mirrors.
And it wasn't me, listeners, if you're wondering who that was. No, I think a big part of the Berlin scene is how unpretentious it is. And it's almost policed that way. Like, we will make sure that it stays like this.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so sometimes you feel like you're going back in time. You're not getting into Berghain or, you know, some of the other techno clubs sometimes, generally speaking, if you're dressed to the nines, for example. As you said, there's plenty of places all weekend, open all weekend with no closing time. And with no photos, a night out doesn't really get reduced to a bunch of selfie taking, for example. So it almost feels like you've gone back in time sometimes to what, you know, it would have been like in the 90s, because for a minute, you know, sort of modern technology is kind of missing its omnipresence. But also, one thing that I love about the Berlin scene, there's plenty of open air parties in summer.
Yeah.
Which is also really fun. You can go out and dance to techno in the hot weather. You know, sometimes there's even a pool nearby or something. And plus, big sections of the gay scene here have great gay sensibility because, yeah, in Berlin, those things go together everywhere, which is part of what makes the city so special.
Yeah, and that's kind of the history of Berghain is evolved from a gay club, right?
It's a party that became a club.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I don't know. Many of the clubs are also not even technically gay. They just sometimes it's a place where everyone sort of meets, which is also part of, I think, what makes the whole thing special.
Yeah, I agree with all those points that both of you mentioned. And I especially also like what you were talking about this like intentionally unpretentious culture. And something that to me is like an especially Berlin experience, I would say, is like you can just throw on a bunch of thrifted clothes and hop on your bike and bike to the club. And then when you're done the next morning or whatever, you can bike home back. Which is like where in, I don't know any other cities around the world where you can bike to the club
Berlin.
And that's normal.
That's so Berlin.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and they are also quite inclusive, I find. I mean, I know that Berghain does have a very kind of, they turn a lot of people away, and that's kind of part of the image of the club. But I think most clubs are very inclusive. You see people from all backgrounds, all parts of society. And I like
ages,
that.
Too.
All ages. Mm-hmm. I like that. I think it's cool.
You just have to know the dress code.
Yes, which is...
Black.
Typically black. Unless it's Sisyphus.
Yes.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. There's always an exception.
Thanks so much for that, guys. So we're just into spring, but the winter season has been a washout for many ski resorts, not only in Germany, but across Europe. That's because it's been too warm and with not enough snow. Many ski resorts were hoping to keep their slopes open until Easter, and that hasn't happened. Paul, first of all, is the ski industry a big one in Germany?
Yeah, I think we could say it's a big one. So according to Statista, Germany is home to the most skiers of all the European countries. But I think that's basically an effect of Germany being the most populous country. So Switzerland and Austria have larger shares of skiers among their population. But it's in general, I think it's probably fair to say that the German ski industry is not as big as some of its neighbors. At least it's not as important to the country's economy in comparison. So I think more tourists are visiting Austria, Switzerland, or France for skiing every year, for example. Even German skiers generally prefer to go to these countries to ski where the mountains are higher.
Yeah, where the mountains are higher, like my home country, but yes.
But skiing is a popular sport in Germany, and there are plenty of German ski resorts that the locals like to visit for a quick trip in the winter. That is when there's enough snow to do so.
Absolutely. So how has climate change been affecting these ski resorts this year and in the last years? And what are meteorologists saying about the temperatures?
Yeah, there's no doubt that climate change has already dramatically affected ski conditions in Europe and really around the world. So last year in January 2023, you may remember there were these dramatic photos coming out of the Swiss ski resorts, with these tiny little trails of snow running down the middle of like a wide grassy mountain slope. And this year, despite a couple winter storms in the early season, the conditions really haven't improved that much. So zooming out a bit to consider climate trends on a global level, we've experienced the highest average air temperatures of all time each month for the last 9 consecutive months. And according to the IPCC, so that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, Europe has been warming faster than the rest of the world. So going forward, the number of frost days in Germany are expected to decrease in the coming years. So the effect of this is Europe's ski season is basically getting shorter and ski resorts are being limited to operating only on the higher slopes that can hold a bit of snow. So for Austrian ski mountains with peaks above 2,000 meters, this may mean that they can send the skiers up to the top of the slope and just kind of not open the lower sections down in the valleys. But if you're a smaller ski resort in Germany with mountains that don't go as high, that might mean that you simply aren't able to maintain operations anymore. And we've already seen that with the closure of some ski resorts around Europe and recently one closed down in Bavaria.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned as well, Paul, when we were writing this story earlier this week, that some are maybe turning more to hiking and things like that. They're encouraging people to hike rather than ski because there's no snow.
Yeah. I actually looked up this resort. I forget what it's called off the top of my head, but this resort in Bavaria that just closed down, they announced like, sorry, we're cutting the ski season here. And furthermore, there's really no skiing here anymore. But they open for the summer season in just a couple weeks, and they will have hiking and these kinds of things.
Paul, I know you do enjoy skiing. There is still some snow to be had, especially at the higher altitudes. And if not, there are plenty of nice mountains to check out. Can you tell us about some you can reach by train from Germany?
Yeah, so since I've come to Germany, I actually started this tradition with a few friends where every winter we make a ski trip on a train to one of Germany's neighboring countries. So this year we visited Val di Sole in the Dolomites in northern Italy. It was warmer. It was like mid-February and we were skiing. It was like 15 degrees and sunny. We could have been skiing in t-shirts if we wanted to. But there was still decent snow cover up there, and there was a lot of people in the mountains. And in previous years, I've been to Austria and Slovenia also for skiing by train. And for me, as someone who grew up in California, it's actually something I really appreciate about living in Europe is that I can go skiing, for example, by train. Because if I am in California and I want to go skiing and I don't have a car or a friend with a car, it's like, forget it.
Yeah.
You're not going.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, same in Canada.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no train for you.
But yeah, here in Europe, really, in I think almost every European country that has skiing, there's options. Some ski resorts that you could even walk to just straight from the train station, or in other cases, maybe just with a connecting bus, it's really manageable.
Do you have a favorite ski destination in Germany?
So to be honest, I've only visited one ski resort in Germany.
So that's your favorite?
Yeah. So my favorite ski resort in Germany is Garmisch,
nice.
Which is, it's south of Munich on the edge of the Alps. It's basically on the Austrian border. And it's right next to the Zugspitze, which is Germany's highest peak. So that's why I went there. It was one of the higher ski slopes in Germany. But I've heard that some of Germany's smaller resorts can be kind of nice when the conditions allow. And personally, my ski philosophy is everywhere is good on a powder day. So if you're lucky enough to have some fresh snow on the ground, yeah, why not check out a local resort? It can be a bit cheaper that way as well.
Really nice. Thanks for that. Right, guess what, guys? There is good news because coming up, there are two public holidays in Germany. They are Good Friday or Karfreitag on March 29th, and then it's Easter Sunday or Ostern, and then Easter Monday is a holiday too. So let's get into a few things people should know about it, whether you live in Germany or you're visiting. Aaron, can you tell us about when pupils are off school around this time in Germany?
Well, Rach, pupils get 2 weeks off for Easter around this time of year, or Osterferien. Exactly when they're off depends on their federal state. So Bremen, Hamburg, and Lower Saxony pupils are already off. That started on the 18th. All other states other than Schleswig-Holstein start theirs between March 23rd and 25th, so early next week. Schleswig-Holstein is the latest to begin. They are an outlier there. They start from April 2nd to 19th.
Okay, so you can expect lots of busy roads when the holidays start and on the public Feiertag holiday days. What about train strikes, Aaron?
Well, the good news is that we have gotten a little bit of a reprieve. Right now, the GDL Union and Deutsche Bahn are in negotiations on contracts. They have declared a pause in strikes, and that will include Easter. So
we hope.
Yeah, we hope.
Yeah. If it changes, we'll let you know.
We hope.
It does seem like this pause seems pretty likely to stick around until at least after Easter. Of course, we could that this dispute isn't solved, so we could be seeing strikes after that. And even though Deutsche Bahn drivers have declared this pause, some of the other unions that are striking right now, sort of airport security staff, for example, or local transport. The Verdi Union represents a lot of local transport, including Berlin's BVG and others. Yeah, they haven't declared a such pause. So there is still, unfortunately, also the possibility that we could see continued strikes from them at any point.
What's open in Germany on these Easter days, Aaron, the weekend?
Well, prepare for a Sunday schedule on the Friday, the Sunday, and the Monday. Easter Monday is a holiday in Germany, with restaurants and cafes open, but supermarkets and shops closed. No bells traditionally ring on Good Friday. And get this, dancing is banned in parts of Germany. There is actually laws on the books for that, banned on Good Friday. Although I've never heard of this ever actually being enforced, and certainly not in Berlin's techno clubs.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that. No techno on Good Friday. Put that in your diary.
Yeah, sure. We'll see who listens.
So you have to get your shopping in before the days.
Yeah, you do.
Days.
Yeah, on the Thursday night, the Saturday, things are open like normal. But on that Saturday, make sure you've bought not for one day off, but two.
Is Easter celebrated quite seriously in Germany, would you say?
I don't know, maybe not quite as seriously as Christmas is, but it's still a big deal with holidays and family time. You might see some bonfires, depending on where you are in Germany. You might even see some burning wheels.
This is also part, yeah.
These traditions are kind of there to drive away the evil winter spirits and to help greet spring. Easter egg hunts are also a thing here, just like they might be back home for us. Sometimes there's even Easter trees where there are like eggs that are put in trees. And many families also just use the time to get out into nature together, maybe go on for a long walk, a hike into nature or something.
Yes, I do think that German families, they take the time together seriously at Easter. They like to maybe have a meal together or go for a long walk, as you say. It's quite nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it for this week. Thank you very much to all our listeners. As always, we will add in the links in the show notes to the stories we've been talking about today. And please leave a review or a rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. This week's panelists have been Paul Krantz and Aaron Burnett. And our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. I'm Rachel Loxton. We hope you enjoyed listening and we'll be back again next week. Until then, take care.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.